Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Fort Myers, where our mission is to love, grow, serve. My name is Teresa Berry, and I am happy to be co-leading service today with fellow worship associate Allie Carville. Today we will be looking at the wisdom of forgiveness, specifically as it pertains to the occasional conundrum of having to forgive ourselves. At our intention table this morning, you're invited to color and write on some forgiveness flowers. These paper flowers are here to serve as a meditation tool for you to use to reflect on the complicated nature of forgiveness, as we will explore during worship. If you choose to leave your flowers here in service, you're welcome to lay them in the baskets beside the stones of intention bowls here on the chancel. The Many Windows session, which runs concurrently with our worship service this morning in room 3, is exploring the themes of freedom and responsibility through the messy art of pendulum painting. Participants will be creating masterpieces of artistic meditation, which will be on display on the screen porch after service. The transition team and the Board of Trustees invite you to sign up for a member-to-member listening group to help plan for a developmental ministry. Discussion will center around where you feel we should be headed in the future. Sign-up sheets are in the narthex for upcoming Sundays. Our pew envelopes serve several purposes. We request our guests complete the envelope to allow us to connect with you and to receive our electronic newsletter. The most important gift you can give us is a chance to get to know you better. Members may update information by using this envelope. Additionally, the envelope may be used to request pastoral care from our caring network, whose mission is that no one feels alone in their time of need. Now I would like to invite up to the chancel Stephanie Hoffman to give an announcement about Lee Interfaith for Empowerment.
Good morning. Hi, my name's Stephanie Hoffman. I have been a member of this church since 2009. You may have not seen me recently, but I have been working hard at Lee Interfaith for Empowerment. That is a group of churches throughout Lee County that works to better our community. This year, the Nehemiah Action, our big call for you to show up, is on March 9th. Please get a ticket for you and all of your friends to come. It's pink. I will be sitting in Hobart Hall after service today and after service next week. The Nehemiah Action is going to be at 7 p.m. Monday, March 9th at Dunbar High School. We have a few big issues that we're working on this year. We're asking the county commissioners to fund an additional 218 infants that are on their wait list so that they can get child care so that their parents can earn a living. We're also asking the Fort Myers City Council to establish an affordable housing trust fund. We've been working on this issue for a while. We got the city to fund a study, and the study says exactly what we've been saying for a few years. We need affordable housing in the city of Fort Myers. We think that they're actually going to do it this time. We're also asking you to participate in a postcard writing campaign with DCF, which is the Department of Children and Families. We'll have postcards at the scene at the Nehemiah Action so that all you have to do is add a personal note and we'll drop it in the mail for you. We're asking them to report on actual numbers of children that are being arrested versus children that are getting civil citations, a program we've been working on for several years. And finally, we're going to have some people from the U.S. Census on site. So if you want to learn about the importance of the census and why everyone should participate, we're going to give them a few minutes to talk to you. And they also really need people to go out and track down people who haven't filled out their census, and they pay really well. So if you'd like to pick up a few extra dollars with an extra job, the census will be hiring on site. So I look forward to seeing you today in Hobart Hall to pick up your tickets. I've got about 200 of them. And on March 9th at 7 p.m. at Dunbar. Thank you.
And now Helen Dixon to give her final announcement about the service auction.
Good morning. The final, oh, my last Sunday, I got to wear these cute ears. The tally hasn't changed much, about 6,500 total income, which is good. Thank you. We do still have some items for sale. Please come to Hobart Hall and check out the items and make your best offer. I may have to turn it down, but I may not. So please see Sheila and me in Hobart Hall in a few minutes. Thanks.
Please join in speaking the words of our covenant. Love is the spirit of this church, and service is law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to speak the truth in love, and to help one another. You may be seated. You are beloved, and you are welcome here.
Whether tears have fallen from your eyes this past week, or gleeful laughter has spilled out of your smiling mouth,
you are beloved, and you are welcome here.
Whether you are feeling brave or brokenhearted, defiant or defeated, fearsome or fearful,
you are beloved, and you are welcome here.
Whether you have untold stories buried deep inside, or stories that have been forced beyond the edges of comfort,
you are beloved and you are welcome here.
Whether you have made promises, broken promises, or are renewing your promises,
you are beloved and you are welcome here.
Whatever is on your heart, however it is within your soul at this moment,
you are beloved and you are welcome here.
In this space of welcome and acceptance, commitment and recommitment, of covenant and connection,
let us worship together.
Please join in our opening hymn number 188, Come, Come, Whoever You Are.
As a child growing up Catholic, my sense was that we should give away forgiveness like candy at Halloween, freely and readily to anyone who comes asking. As an adult Unitarian Universalist, however, I have realized that forgiveness is a lot more complicated and challenging than that image would imply. What should we ask of those who have hurt us before we offer forgiveness, if anything? Must someone seek your forgiveness in order for you to forgive them? What if they can't or won't? What about self-forgiveness? Is there a point where something or someone is beyond forgiveness? What about forgiveness of a group, community, or institution, or life itself? Forgiveness is connected to memory and time. It asks us to engage our feelings about something in the past in order to change our experience in the present and move into the future. Forgiveness is an act of vulnerability, both from the one seeking and the one offering, as it reveals the risks of trying to love in an imperfect world.
Friday night, I was exhausted. I spent the day at the church assisting our office manager, my mother, Jill Carville, only to find myself back at church for a worship associate meeting that evening. Exhaustion is a trigger for seizures that I have, partial complex. So I made sure to take my anti-seizure medication before I was picked up by Jennifer Grant for the evening. Still, as the night went on, I found myself struggling to focus. Uh-oh, I thought. So I quickly scrambled a note to Reverend Margaret Beard, who was sitting next to me. I needed to tell someone about what to do should I have an episode that only lasts a minute, but nonetheless, all the while, trying not to make a disturbance in the discussion. Sometimes I feel like I ask a lot of my friends and my family, constantly asking for rides to places, asking someone to monitor me in case I have a seizure, asking for medical assistance aside from seizures in the middle of a long day for me to be present. Growing up with a disability, I was often made to feel like a burden outside of my immediate friends, family, and community here. I recall participating in community theater as a child. I wanted to be part of the big group dance numbers, but I was always considered to be, quote unquote, in the way of the others. So instead, I was cast as the elderly character. Yes, an 8-year-old playing someone about 10 times their age. I always came across as cute when I did, but the experience left me wounded. And that's just one of many such experiences. But in this community, I'm not a burden. This community helps me be present in so many ways. Whether it's the car rides, watching for neurological episodes, the medical, that's all a little thing to the ones that really care about me here. The fact I'm here contributing to the conversation, the life of this place, and our collective faith, that's what matters to you and me. This community helps me forgive myself for feeling burdensome. And it's always been this way. I've been here since I was 5 years old. I'm turning 30 this year. If you'd asked me in my late elementary and middle school years of what my favorite day of the week was, Sunday. Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. Sunday, I'm in a place that was accessible when it didn't have to be legally. I'm reminded of our beloved member, Ed Porteous, who supervised the construction of this very sanctuary in the mid-90s, 5 years after the legalization of the Americans with Disabilities Act. He insisted a ramp be built for anyone and everyone to access the sanctuary and chancel. In theater, there's a term called found space, a place that wasn't solely designed for traditional or plot purposes, but a character or individual finds a new place for the purpose of connection and discovery for something that they're dealing with. I was originally drawn into theater because there's so many stories of burdens searching for connections. The Phantom in Phantom of the Opera, Grisabella, the elderly cat in Cats, and Charlie in Kinky Boots, all looking for nothing more than to be accepted for who they are. I found that connection, that acceptance, that self-forgiveness here. In these songs, these moments, they help me forgive myself for thinking little of me, thinking myself a burden, not worthy inclusion. A few youth services ago, the youth needed a pianist for an accompanist for songs to be sung during it. One of them was, "We Forgive Ourselves." The lyric is, "We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. I found myself saying yes. Yes to community who needed me, who needed all of our collective gifts. And that is why I love this place. Thank you."
I invite you now into the spirit of meditation. Please allow your bodies, your spirits, and your brains to become as comfortable as they can. We gather with a hunger for reconciliation. What is done cannot be undone. What is done next must now be done with care. We gather because we are hopeful, because we have visions and dreams of a brighter future, that there may be more than vision in this room. These are the wounds we must heal together. Grief and anger for all that has been lost, guilt or fear in the reliving, pain that has gone without sufficient comfort, mistrust that was earned, that continues burning still. Every injury we may have named and yet still carry, those we can't, haven't, or dare not speak aloud, those we are not ready to make public, those still not recognized, accepted, understood. These are the wounds that seek replacement, not cancellation, not denial, wounds we will tend cautiously, applying the salve of understanding, forming scars that mark our history without disfiguring the future we might share. This is not a time of quick solutions, fancy talking. This is a slow precision. This is a prayer for peace. We are new at this endeavor, new at listening, new at hearing, new at taking enough time to honestly receive one another's stories. What is done cannot be undone. What is done next must be done with care. We gather because we are hopeful, because we have visions and dreams of a brighter future. May the strength of this time together help us to move forward. May the wisdom of this experience help us to know our path. May we have the courage to return as often as necessary until our way is clear. May we have the perseverance together to see it through. May we cause it to be so.
We have a tradition here at this congregation of offering a stone of intention in a bowl of sand. This stone may represent for you a prayer, joy, sorrow, or a milestone in your life. You'll find the sand bowls at the front and sides of the sanctuary. And if you didn't pick a stone up on the way in, there are plenty in baskets next to the bowls. May this stone bring you peace. May your prayers be heard and your hearts restored. Please join in the reflective hymn, number 1031, May I Be Filled with Loving Kindness.
Family legend holds that I was an angry baby, just willful and discontented until I learned how to crawl. And then I imagine I became a willful toddler, even though my mom says she was too tired to hold down a memory in those days. I don't remember being a baby, but I can remember that as soon as I discovered that I didn't have to hide under our big oak kitchen table, or in the crawl space that connected my room to my brother's, I have always felt like I had to run. Anytime the regret collects, the memories of things I would rather forget inch in, or the familiar track of insecurity starts looping around, I can feel the panic bird flapping in my throat and my legs throb. It begins in the small tendons and muscles of my ankle complex, moves up to tighten my calves and then the larger muscles in my thighs until my hamstrings and quadriceps constrict everything else and I feel like I am only my legs. So for years, I ran. Before I even graduated from high school, I was gone and I didn't go back to anything resembling home unless I absolutely had to. I had my reasons. Among them was me not feeling like my family wanted me, and probably in a lot of ways, they still don't want the parts of me they cannot accept. I swear profusely. I eat too much and sometimes off of other people's plates. If there is something better left unsaid, I am going to say it. I'm too queer, too outspoken, too friendly to strangers, too dedicated to all the wrong ideals. No matter how hard they tried, they could not turn out a decent example of a lady. So I ran away, in no particular direction, with no particular ideas, and I stayed there. I did have reasons to return, however. One of them was my stepmom, Susan. The first time I met her, I was 6 or 7, and she brought a box of homemade blueberry muffins to my dad's apartment. She was 4 feet, 8 inches tall and had the loudest voice I have ever heard. She was wearing a black fur coat and called me sweetie before she knew if I was sweet at all, and she was just the type of woman I wanted to be. She wore lipstick. We would go on dates, she and I, to lunch at the Galleria, or the Del Mar Loop, or the St. Louis Art Museum. For my 12th birthday, she bought me a dozen white roses because they were my favorite at the time. She encouraged me to read Amy Tan and write my own stories, and best of all, she never outwardly judged me for my deep need to go to PetSmart on adoption day and sing Memory at the Cats. As my teenage years wore on, she was my confidant. She was the person I could talk to about the poetry I struggled to create, how confused I was about sex and the universe, and what does it all really mean. And she would listen and sometimes advise, but mostly did a lot of nodding. And we would go back to singing Bonnie Raitt on the radio. She kept buying me flowers for significant milestones, though my preferences changed from white roses to sweet violets to red poppies. She also assisted in what I had thought to be insurmountable. Her loving presence began the work of healing my dad and softened him somewhat to the world. So when she fell ill while I was away at college, I called her more frequently and made plans to come home for the holidays. I did not keep these plans in spite of her gentle nudges that she missed me, the cards she would send in the mail to discuss nothing in particular, except that she thought of me when she read the poem inside, her handwriting becoming worse and worse as time went by, and while that all made me feel bad, there was still that bird panicking in my throat, and my legs would tense up, and I couldn't make myself go back, so I didn't. After I graduated, found a job as a caregiver, and had a nice live-in boyfriend, everything felt very stable, and I didn't want to go back because it would upend my new normal. In late August of 2013, my dad called very late at night. He was sobbing on the other end and just said, "We've lost her. She's gone." The conversation was brief, and I hung up the phone, turned to my boyfriend, and said, "I just don't want to go alone." He smiled sadly, kissed me on the forehead, and helped me pack a bag. Some journeys you have to make by yourself. The drive from Colorado to Missouri is flat and monotonous, but there's a meditative quality to being in the presence of so much sky. The hardy creatures of the plains doing whatever it is they do, carrying on in spite of my grief. The corn still grew up tall and straight. The wind still pelleted my car in the same way as my intrusive inner monologue. How could I have been so selfish and ignored her calling me back? How had I missed this milestone when she had been present for so many of mine? My professional life had been a swirl of bed baths, cannulas, catheters, compression hose, Medminders kept in locked boxes to which only a select few held the key, holding the hand of a client while she was sundowning, and then days, weeks, or months later, holding her hand into the wee hours as she drifted off into the great big whatever, and inevitably crying in the car on the way home because it is lonely, lonely work to help people die. My stepmom was dying, and I could not have been farther away. And then my thoughts turned to my father and how I could possibly have let him undergo caring for the woman he loved, who'd been sicker than I had imagined, all by himself. And I wondered if he would be angry and if he would not let me in the house. I desperately wanted to turn back time and do it all over again, differently, perfectly. When I arrived at my dad's house, the same yellow house with the green roof that had been hers first, I walked up to the front door using the same old concrete steps that I painted one summer for spending money. My dad met me there at the windowed facade, and before I could even move, he reached across the threshold, pulled me into his arms, and held me tightly. Within that unselfconscious expression of his pain, he said, "I'm so glad you're back." And I felt his love for me as a force so dumb and fierce as to forgive anything. I moved through the old house and saw the bed unmade where she had slept just nights before. There was a jagged hole in the drywall next to the bed that led through to the kitchen where her oxygen machine lived. Small clear tubes ran from the machine to her night table. I imagined my father making this alteration to the house the way he made all alterations, late at night, alone and silent, muttering under his breath. He probably pulled a pencil out from behind his ear and marked the wall where precise cuts were to be made, and then eventually used his fists and nails to claw away at the drywall, some act of rage directed at the unfairness of disease. Later at her memorial, my father dropped to his knees, cradled his face in his hands, and wept this sorrowful aria of regret, the refrain, "I'm so sorry." That earnest longing in him caused the cell to burst inside of me, and for the first time in my life, I saw my dad as fully human, deeply flawed, deeply loved, and deeply redeemable. My chest opened and a herd of wild horses thundered out. I did not want to run with them. I wanted to rest in the pain and discomfort of that moment with someone. My Christian friends talk about grace in a way that I don't always understand, like it is some surrender to what has been and what is, a trust that imperfection can be made holy via faith. If hurt and shame had dug the grave, then maybe grace could fill it in. In the case of my stepmom, I'll never know. I cannot resurrect the dead or go back in time. I haven't figured out how to do that yet, though I really do want to. Forgiveness is something I had to offer myself by choosing not to run away and by making living amends. My dad and I shared this twin grief, a kindred guilt about not having done enough, not having said the right things when it mattered, not having been enough. In reality, we were both doing the best that we could with what we have, which might not have been enough, but did not leave either of us outside of the reach of forgiveness. Returning home was returning to myself so I could begin doing that work. After her memorial service, I sat with my dad on the porch and watched the moon rise. During that elegiac rite, I said, "I'm sorry." And he replied, "I know, me too." And in the quiet stillness of that balmy Missouri summer, only hours before the bright stars of morning would awaken the birds, I let my prayers of contrition rise, and I let them sprint away.
Please join in hymn number 357, number Bright Morning Stars.
Thank you.
We come to this place because we love what exists here. This church is a living entity, and like all living things, it must have nurture and sustenance. Its breath and living its heartbeat, its life itself can only be derived from its living components, us. One of the ways we have enlivened our religious values in the world is by making them real through the form of financial contribution. We pay it forward every month by sharing all undesignated funds to the community sharing organization chosen by our congregation. If you would like to write a check to the church or designate cash for the general fund, please use the manila envelopes and check off EUCFM. If you're a guest this morning, please be sure to fill out the connection information as well and drop it into the offering as the ushers come by. This month's community sharing organization is Visuality. The mission of Visuality is to enhance and sustain the health and well-being of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning communities. They provide activities, programs, educational events, and services that empower community members and provide essential resources and advocate for civil and human rights, embracing, promoting, and supporting our diversity. They strive to end violence, harassment, and discrimination based on real or perceived sexual orientation, gender identity, or sexual expression. The morning offering will now be given and gratefully received.
Good morning. This is a song about creating and maintaining safe space for yourself. Need a place I can call my own, a little house that I call home. It's a place I can hang my hat and keep my window open, and I keep my blues soft spoken. Place I can throw my shoes, getting tired of these walking blues. The birds will tell me when the morning comes. I keep my window open and I keep my blues soft spoken. If I close that window, keep it inside. No place for dreams to fly. I wake up every morning just like a child. I get up, I look outside. Hillside farm sets above the sea, a field of grass and one big tree. You hear the ocean on a windy day. I keep my window open, and I keep my blues soft-spoken. Watch a shadow move across the floor. It tells the time, but maybe more. Listen closely, I can hear my song. I keep my window open, and I keep my blues soft spoken. And I keep my window open, and I keep my blues soft spoken.
Receive this morning's offering. By the work of our hands and the work of our hearts, our love is made real. May we be grateful for all that is given and grateful for all that is shared. Please remain risen as we extinguish the chalice this Sunday morning.
Much of ministry is a benediction.
A speaking well of each other and the world.
A speaking well of what we value. Honesty.
Love.
Forgiveness.
Trust.
A speaking well of our efforts.
A speaking well of our dreams.
This is how we celebrate life.
Through speaking well of it.
Living the benediction.
And becoming as a word well spoken. Go in peace.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hell, it's always.
Again, I have no idea how you do it.
It's fun. It's fun. I don't know how it. I don't know either.
I agree.
I don't know. And I think it's just. Well, I know the progression,
right,
but I don't.
Right.
I still don't know how I.
We figured out how to make it work.